For thousands of years, human beings had been fermenting fruits and grains to create mildly intoxicating beverages.
Oh yeah, it's like that.
But by the 1800s, rum, whiskey, and other distilled spirits with significantly higher alcohol content had become increasingly available.
Yeah, like beer.
Well, that you can never have too much of.
Oh, Susan, I like you so much.
All of a sudden, you have all of these people growing grain, growing corn, growing oats, growing wheat, that can be distilled into whiskey.
God bless the cook. Now drink. Cheers.
And so all of these rituals that had been part of the human experience, where farmers would get up and you would have beer with breakfast and beer with lunch and beer with your afternoon break and beer with dinner, but you're talking about 2% beer.
I get hog dug back in the studio. Don, excuse me. We are on our fourth beer.
You say it like it's a bad thing.
We're 26 minutes into the show, and he's pouring Duvel now.
Hey, we're trying to sober up.
But now all of a sudden, people are drinking whiskey instead. And it took a while for the culture to recognize that, wait a minute, there's something really wrong here.
Don't judge me or judge what I'm doing by the 5 minutes that you see.
Sure.
By 1830, the average American over 15 years of age drank the equivalent of 88 bottles of whiskey every year.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit, what happened to that beer we made?
Three times as much as their 21st century descendants drink.
What the f*** was that supposed to be?
Americans spent more money on alcohol each year than the total expenditures of the federal government.
Oh, great.
Inebriates filled the nation's poorhouses and workhouses and prisons.
Oh, shit.
More and more, people began to worry that the country was becoming a nation of drunkards.
The guy used to ski downhill, shooting machine guns, drinking martinis, sleeping with European broads three at a time.
And as the wages of many husbands and fathers and sons went to the grog shop, women and children became victims, mistreated, abandoned, deprived of food and shelter.
This is some bullshit.
Alcohol consumption at that point was a sign of masculinity that took away masculinity. So that you drank to show that you were a man, but you get drunk and all of a sudden you can't provide for your family, you can't do your job.
Guess what? F*** you.
You become violent.
You know something? There's some real bitchy, crabby, unhappy people out there. Blow me.
There are so many references to the degradation of Saturday night.
Motherfucker.
Implicit that a man would go out, first of all, he would leave the home, he would go to a saloon, he would get drunk, and he would come home and do whatever he wanted.
Talking, drinking, having fun, basically falling into a food coma.
This is a time when there is no divorce, but you can discuss it through alcoholism and what alcohol does to men.
Hey, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. I like that Prohibition documentary that Ken Burns did. I thought it was great. I didn't like a lot of the message, and I think it just goes to show just how off the wall people are. I mean, alcohol gets vilified all the time. It's happening now. You see that happening now, which is why I think it's kind of important to go back and look at that and look what happened because of it. I mean, got a nation full of criminals were born out of that era. Famous criminals, too. I think the problem is people who can't control their booze. I mean, if you can't drink and chill, don't fucking drink. It's as simple as that. Alcohol's not sitting on the shelf thinking, hey, come abuse me. You know, if you can't do it and have fun with it and feel a little funny and enjoy the flavor, if that's a problem for you, don't drink. If that creates problems in your life, you beat your kids, you beat your wife, you don't go to your job, you know, you can't pay your rent. Now, that's some bullshit. Otherwise, I thought it was great. What a great idea this is. There's this food truck in Kansas City called The Melt, which sells a grilled cheese sandwich stuffed with pulled pork ribs, grilled onions, white and Havarti cheeses on Parmesan toast. And they started setting the food truck up in the parking lot at Arrowhead Stadium so people can tailgate on Sundays and eat the sandwich before the Chiefs games. Now, I got to wonder, how many other food trucks are setting up in the parking lots of football stadiums on Sundays? That is brilliant. If you can't bring your own food or maybe you can't cook, food trucks. Sounds like a really good sandwich, too. Pretty pathetic, though. The highlight of the Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium is probably that sandwich, because the Chiefs are not very good this year. I'd go eat that sandwich, then drive home and watch them lose on television in the comfort of my own home. That's what I would do. Topic today, Anju, Debbie Lee's new snack bar venture. It's like a classier version of her food truck without the wheels. And it's got a permanent home. And she's written a new cookbook that we're going to be cooking from, Hangover Stew. That's an awesome name for a very good dish. And we're going to be talking to her at the soft opening of her new Anju location in Glendale, where she's signing copies of her new book. We'll be drinking some beer, discussing Mario Batali, and listening to another great idea from David Chang, who never ceases to amaze me with his creativity. We're not going to be talking about Top Chef. Not that it's bad, but there's just not anything to really cover. There weren't any arrogant chefs surfacing since that Blowhard shot his mouth off in the premiere. This last episode, confusing. I couldn't keep up with whose dish was whose, who made what. But they did put some motherfucking snakes on some motherfucking plates. That was fun. Top Chef Texas. Hey, I mentioned in the last episode, but I wanted to remind you that My Life as a Foodie is now available on Stitcher. Now you can listen to the show on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS phone. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. You can find it in the App Store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So I'm drinking Stone's Vertical Epic 11-11-11 on today's show. It was released earlier this month, and again, I really can't rely on any preconceived notions about anything that I have. If I haven't seen it or tasted it, I got to learn to shut the hell up, because when I first heard about this beer, I read that it had Anaheim chilies from Hatch, New Mexico in it and cinnamon. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Stone has flipped its lid this time. Well, I'm here to tell you, this is actually quite good. If you've had these Vertical Epics before, specifically the 2006 Belgian Strong Ale, you're going to love this beer. It's a lot like the 2006 Vertical Epic, except it's got a slight dry finish, probably due to the chilies or the cinnamon. It's ruby-colored beer, nice, fat, thick head. You can smell dark fruit when you stick it up to your nose. Not a lot of the chili really comes through. But when you taste it, it's that classic, overly ripe cherry or prune flavor that makes dark Belgian beers really great. But as again, it finishes a little tart, not dry as a bone tart, so it's not like really hoppy, but just tart enough to let you know there's something in there. Very drinkable beer, and I think this will age very well. I suspect that they're coming up on the very last beer in this series next December, and this is really setting up, it sets the precedent for something greater coming down the road. I don't know what they have planned, but this is a really good preemptive strike. I think they're going to do something huge for their finale. And if this beer is any indication, I don't care if they decide to announce that they're going to brew with cat shit. I mean, I'll be looking forward to the cat shit beer from Stone. And I'll sure they'll knock that one right out of the park. That's awesome. So a couple of years ago, Katrina got a phone call at work from this woman who turned out to be Chef Debbie Lee. I'm not going to go into the details of what she called about because nothing really materialized from it. But we ended up getting to know Debbie. And she was currently on the Next Food Network Star, which was in its fifth season. And she had made it as a finalist in third place, but we couldn't talk about it. And it was kind of interesting to know somebody who had gone through this. I had already met Nathan Lyon, who made it to fourth in the second season. Now listen, and you know this, I don't like the direction that Food Network ended up taking. You all know that. I no longer watch anything that's on it. None of it really appeals to me. Not even this Next Food Network Star, Next Food Network Star show. But what I like about it is what comes out of it. You know, the results of those shows. Here's Debbie's bio from the Next Food Network star promo that they were running during her season.
I want to teach the Food Network viewer to not be afraid of Asian food. I would probably describe myself as the person completely going against the grain.
I'm of Korean descent, and my parents, when they immigrated to the U.S., they came to the South, ironically.
And I've gone through a whole learning curve with myself as a woman, as a Korean, as an American.
One thing us Southerners and Koreans like to do in common, we love to have parties.
My culinary point of view is really simple. It's soul to soul. It's the journey of my life as a girl.
I've learned, of course, initially how to eat Southern food and make really good down-home soul food, we call it. And on the same time, I've learned the other part of soul, which is my heritage through my grandmother.
She doesn't speak any English. I don't speak any Korean. And she taught me the flavors of my country via sign language.
I was the only Asian girl, literally, in my whole school. And my grandma was a huge part of letting me be proud. And food led me to like my food, to like myself.
It gave me this inner peace and therapy that I couldn't get as an outlet anywhere else. I think I can bring the viewers a really important message that it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, who you're dealing with. When it comes down to the table, you guys can all sit down and finally find something in common. And to me, that is a real powerful thing.
From the second season, we got Nathan Lyon, a very good chef, a very good person, an advocate for farmers markets, farmers, and a very good friend of mine. From the fourth season, we got, well, more importantly, I got Debbie Lee. All right? Let's be serious. Debbie went on to do a stint at the Bread Bar, where I first got a chance to taste her food, and I fell in love with the idea of Korean pub grub. If you listen to episode 58, I have a full recap on that. Oh, what a night that was. And if you've been listening for a long time, you'll remember way back in the first year of the show, episode 8, I talked about beef bulgogi and how great I thought Korean food was, because I really started to understand it. Now, Katrina told me she doesn't think there's anybody in our neighborhood who is a round eye, white, you know, non-Korean, who has embraced Korean food and the markets we have available around us as much as I have. I don't know if that's true, but I do know that I love Korean food. It's comforting. It's spicy. It's healthy. It's loaded with flavor, and it warms me up inside every time I have it. It's very comforting. The market that I shop from, maybe a mile from my house, within walking distance, it's got the freshest produce, the freshest fish, meat, chicken, everything. It's like an indoor farmer's market to me. I can get American Wagyu beef there. I buy Berkshire pork bellies there to make my bacon. They have saltwater tanks with live seafood in them, always something new. For a while, and I don't think they do this anymore, if you showed up on a Friday afternoon, they'd have this whole yellowtail on a table. It'd been cut up. Big tail on it. You couldn't see the face. This thing was getting, you know, hatchet time. There was a man behind it with a big blade, ready to cut off however much you needed. I literally walked up to this fish, smelled nothing else but sea. I looked at this dude. I don't speak Korean. I put up one finger. Give me a pound of that. He cuts off a nice hunk, took it home. I made poke out of it. Brilliant. That is the kind of shopping experience I have a couple times a week, and I wouldn't have it if there weren't a large Asian population around me demanding a supply like that. You demand it, it'll come, and you know what? They want good stuff, too. They're like the Italians. Italian women go to the grocery store, they want the freshest. They want the best piece of meat. They want the freshest cucumbers. They want the freshest everything, and they deserve it. Why? Because they deserve it. And the Koreans deserve fresh stuff. And because they deserve it, I get it. So from the first time I tasted Debbie Lee's food, I was in love. Not just with her food. You know, she's warm, she's loving, she's friendly, she gives really good hugs. And when we returned a second time for my birthday with Nathan and Bobby, showered me with extra treats. A special mung bean pancake, which she said was a traditional Korean birthday surprise. Delicious. We had everything. I think we drank, I'm not sure. Listen, yeah, if you can't remember if you drank, you probably drank. But she was over the top in her generosity. She always is. So she wanted to open a restaurant, but the timing wasn't right. And you know how hard it is to open a restaurant. We've talked about that. Bogner just opened his restaurant. I've yet to talk to him about it. When things settle down, I will. But for her, the best opportunity was to take advantage of the food truck revolution, which she did. This resulted in the Anju truck, which got really popular very fast. She served a lot of the pub grub that she served at Soul Town Tapas. Korean nachos, I love those. the bacon-wrapped rice stick, so many other great foods. It was a great food experience for anybody who had not tasted her food before, and I think that's the brilliance of a food truck. That good food comes to you. So before we knew it, she had announced she'd written a cookbook. And I'm like, how do you find time to do this? She did. It's available now. You can buy her book, Soul Town Kitchen, Korean Pub Grub to Share with Family and Friends, from Amazon.com right now. It's on our website, mylifeasafoodie.com. You can click, buy it. You know, you don't have to live in a Korean town to eat this food. You don't have to have Asians all around you to have an Asian store. A lot of ingredients are easily available in grocery stores. If you need special ingredients, she's got, you know, links to websites in the back of her book. You can eat this food inexpensively at home and taste exactly what we're raving about. In fact, if you right now, you could go to Mitsuwa.com or Hmart.com. Right now, you can buy the same stuff we're buying out here. If you want it bad enough, it's a few clicks away. Think about it. I mean, imagine how great would it be. You'd be in the middle of Wisconsin, and you're having a Korean dinner party. And people are like, where the hell did this come from? I think that would be fantastic. That would be me if I was living in the Midwest, I'll tell you that much. So the book was eye-opening. First of all, my friend Charles from 100 Miles, he's on the cover. Ask me if that made me jealous. Inside the book was really eye-opening stuff from Debbie. In the introduction of the book, she explains that growing up Korean in Arizona was very hard for her, and she struggled. She often hid the fact that she was Korean. She says, growing up in the 1970s in Arizona, I thought I needed to hide my heritage and culture. In fact, I've spent most of my life trying to pretend not to be Korean. Like most second-generation Korean kids of immigrants, I battled with my identity, trying simultaneously to find myself and just be part of the crowd. It was not until my 40th birthday, after my appearances on the Food Network show, that I truly embraced who I am and where I came from. Cooking on national television made me realize that my homeland was the source of some of the most amazing traditions, culture, and most of all, food. The funny thing is, for years, starting when I was a kid, when introducing myself to a group, I would take Korean food with me, like mandu, which are dumplings, as something to distinguish me. 9 out of 10 times, this method worked. If you're a second or third generation anything in this country, that has to grab you a little bit. Because my mother, my aunts, my uncles, they all dealt with this when they were children. My grandparents landed in Ellis Island in the 1910s. And back then, it was not cool to be an Italian-American. We didn't have The Godfather yet, The Sopranos, nothing like that. It was uncool to be Italian. When my mother, my aunts, my uncles went to school, they went with different names so they could blend in a little better. My Aunt Millie, I grew up with an Aunt Mill. I later learned her name was Carmella. My grandparents named her Carmella. Uncle Albert was actually Alfonso. My mother, Phyllis, they called her. Her real name was Philomena. I had an Uncle Gay. Actually, I think I still have an Uncle Gay. And that was short for Gaylord. And his real name was Gaspari. Dude, I'll take the beating from school kids over the name Gaspari. What the hell were they thinking with that one? But they were ashamed. They were ashamed of what people would think of them because they were immigrants. To think that even in the 70s you'd feel shameful to show your heritage is really something else. But then you think about it. In the 70s, she's dealing with fathers of kids who probably fought in the Korean War. The Vietnam War was still going on. Man, people were not open-minded. Here in California, it's fine. There, maybe not so much. It's the South, technically. And if you truly think about it, it's like being in the South. So getting back to Debbie's book, she's on this nationwide book tour, signing books, pitching the book, getting the word out about her food, how proud she is to share it with everybody. But being someone who is so driven, she acts like she's making up for lost time now. So she strikes while the iron is red hot, and it is red hot. And she opens this restaurant right in the heart of Americana in Glendale, just outside of Los Angeles. Actually, it's not really a restaurant. It's more of a snack bar. You walk right up to the front, place your order, go find a seat outside just behind the kiosk. Then they call you when your food is ready. Unlike the food truck, you actually have a nice place to sit and enjoy Debbie's delicious food. And it's a setting really nice. It's a huge fountain. Lots of really good-looking people there. You're right at the Americana at Brand. There's tons of shops. You can step into a shop when you're done. It's located at 668 Americana Way, Suite FP5 in Glendale. Phone number is 818-242-3793. or you can visit their website, anjoo.com, A-H-N-J-O-O.com. They're also on Twitter, Seoul2Seoul, Seoul as in Seoul, Korea, S-E-O-U-L. So on today's show, we're going to visit Debbie Lee at her soft opening for the restaurant. We're going to get her to sign my copy of the book. Then I'm going to come back here, cook one of her dishes in my kitchen. There are a ton of great recipes to choose from here, but considering how cool the weather has been getting, and because the name of the dish is so kick-ass, we're going to make hangover stew. Debbie has this great description for this stew in her book. She says, one of the best things about going to a Korean pub is that you can eat a remedy stew or soup while you drink to prevent a hangover from occurring the next morning. Gamjatang, which is pork and potato stew, is a smart pick when you know you're going to be going through several bottles at one sitting. I also like to order gamjatang to go for the morning after, just in case. We Koreans believe that the hot peppers and loads of spice will sweat out all the toxins in your body. Whether it's true or not, this is the kind of dish that's always better the second day around. So be sure to make enough for leftovers, which, you know, you'll be having whether you drink or not. It requires that you make pork stock, so we're going to need to do that first as the base of the stew. And believe me, you want to make your own stock here because the layers of flavor that this stew has requires a long day of reducing stock so you build flavors. If you've never made stock before, you'll be amazed at how simple it really is. And you won't go back to the canned stuff anymore because it's so easy to make it. There's a complete list of ingredients on our website for this dish, but I'm going to go over it here just for those of you who don't visit the site often. I'll tell you what you'll need. You'll need 2 pounds of pork butt that you've cut into 3-inch pieces, 2 cups of smoked chili rub, which we're going to make here shortly, 2 yellow onions sliced 1/4 inch thick, 1/4 cup of thinly sliced garlic cloves, 2 quarts of pork stock, which we're going to make here shortly, 2 cans of beer, which is about 24 ounces of beer, preferably some light beer, maybe some lager. Don't get fancy here. 1/4 cup of soy sauce, 1 tablespoon of garlic powder, 1 tablespoon of onion powder, 2 tablespoons of chili pepper flakes, 3 tablespoons of sugar, 2 tablespoons of sesame oil, 1 pound of new potatoes that you've washed and cut in half lengthwise, 12 Korean peppers, or, you know, Anaheim chili type peppers, anything kind of, you know, not really spicy, but green peppers, some sea salt, white pepper, and about 1/4 cup of chopped scallions for garnish. There is not much in that recipe that you won't be able to find pretty much anywhere. And the flavor, oh man, wait till you taste this. All right, off to Anjoo, then I'll see you back in the kitchen.
First thing I wanted to ask you was the food truck, the Anjoo food truck. Mm-hmm. Is that still around or is that...
It's sleeping right now.
It's sleeping?
It's sleeping.
What does that mean exactly?
It's taking a little bit of a rest.
Okay.
It didn't have a lot of days off, and so it's taking a little bit of a rest while the new Anjoo is built.
Okay.
It's going to come out for like catering and special events, but right now we just wanted, you know, I'm one body, and between that and the chore, I wanted to focus on the new baby and make sure I wasn't spreading myself too thin.
How long ago did you decide to open this location?
A month and a half ago.
You built it in a month and a half?
I built it, actually. After we got sign-off, we moved it in 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And so all the food that we saw at the pop-up, all the food that we saw at the truck, a lot of that's available here. New things here?
There are some new things here, yeah. So a lot of the old favorites, like, you know, at the pop-up I had the meatballs, which I couldn't do. So I brought those back. And there's, you know, things. So after sort of discovering what people like and don't like, I sort of decided to put it all together and find the perfect package for everyone.
Sure.
So, yeah.
What's also great about this is that it's like the food truck grew up, and now you've got a place to actually sit down and enjoy the food.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I've been saying a long time about these food trucks is it's a disservice sometimes of the food to have to sit on a curb and eat it with a plastic fork.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So I think that it respects the food a little more.
Yeah, it gave everybody a chance to... It gave everybody a chance to acclimate and figure out what worked, what didn't when we went to this phase. So now, like now, it's like, you know, Viet says it best, my partner, where, you know, he's like, you and I got pregnant and had a baby. And we didn't sleep for a year and a half.
And it's a good looking
and
baby.
And now the toddler still needs a lot of caring, but mom and pop can go out every once in a while.
That's great. Awesome.
That's the way you put it.
What does Anjoo mean?
Anju means a snack that you eat while drinking.
Okay. So
it's pub grub.
Bar food. Now, is this a popular thing in Korea?
This is a daily ritual in Korea. Yeah, this is what you do, like, if you're done after work and you want to go catch up with your buddies for a little bit before going home to the wife, and you'd go there, get a couple of bottles of soju and some beers and a bunch of small plates and start going to town.
The recipes in your book, were they stuff that you grew up eating?
It's a mixture of stuff that I grew up eating and also a mixture of things that I love to eat at a pub.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's my versions of that.
And everything goes with beer really well.
Beer or soju.
Beers perfectly. Nice. That's awesome. So, Food Network, that whole, the trip you've made since being on Food Network.
Yeah.
How has your life changed?
God, a lot of ways. You know, I don't think if I ever would have gone on the Food Network had I been cooking again.
You wouldn't have taken this path.
I wouldn't have taken this path. It allowed me to do what I really, truly love to do, and that's cook the food I want every day.
Do you think, had you won on Food Network and become a TV chef,
yeah,
how would your life... You wouldn't have taken this path. We wouldn't have gotten this
yeah,
restaurant.
Yeah, you may not have gone on to you. So in a way, I think we, you know, have Food Network to thank for that because, you know, I think I was given a really great gift in being able to do this. But at the same time, you know... It still gave me my freedom, you know. I had the carte blanche of people recognizing me from the Food Network and having that credibility, but at the same time, it allowed me to continue to grow, and that was truly amazing.
Can you tell me who won that year on Food Network?
Yeah, Melissa D'Arabian.
Who?
Melissa D'Arabian.
Exactly. I don't know who she is.
She was the mother of four, super mom.
She was?
Yes.
She have a show now?
She does.
She does?
She does.
Is it on Food Network?
It is.
Okay. I'm just out of the know. I know Debbie Lee very well.
Oh,
and I know that, would you say Debbie, what's her name again? Susan Mesabian?
Melissa
Mesabian?
No, yeah. Melissa D'Arabian.
Okay then, yeah, she doesn't have a restaurant.
She's got a great show.
Yeah. Well, it's just great to see that you've taken this path and that we're getting here. And maybe at some point we'll have a regular actual restaurant we actually sit down and have a meal at.
Definitely in the plans.
But I could see a few of these popping up.
Yeah, this is actually going to be the first of the model for several locations, we hope. So this is definitely a fast casual model that we're looking to
expand. I think you're across from a Victoria's Secret or something over there too, right?
Right.
Something like that. Not a bad location.
Especially for the guys, right?
Exactly, right. We're going to go back home now. We're going to cook your hangover soup.
Okay, sounds good.
You have
good.
Any special tips?
I'm coming
tips?
Over, by the
You're
way.
Coming over? Okay, you got to get drunk first.
I can do that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Debbie.
You're welcome. Thanks for always being here.
Hey, don't ask me why I didn't know who Melissa D'Arabian was. I guess that's a price I pay for not keeping up with Food Network. Is her show any good? I mean, it says she's a stay-at-home mom. I don't know if that's a cooking show I would watch, but I wish her luck. Sorry I crapped out on the name, though. I mean, seriously, I don't watch. I don't know. I don't know everything. All right, so first thing we're going to need to do here is make our stock. You're going to need a shitload of pork bones here, preferably neck bones. So you want to get with your butcher on this. What you'll need here is a large daikon radish peeled and quartered, two sweet potatoes that you've peeled and cut in half, three large yellow onions cut in half, a half a cup of garlic cloves, two leeks that you've cut in half, make sure you clean those, three carrots peeled and cut in half, some sesame oil to coat the stuff with, some sea salt, white pepper, about 5 pounds of pork neck bones, shoulder bones, any kind of pork bones, about 5 pounds worth, and then about 2 gallons of water. Okay, the first thing we want to do here is preheat our oven to 325. We'll get a large baking sheet here. You can get all the vegetables there and put the pork bones on it. All right, then we're going to drizzle all of this with some sesame oil. Kind of toss it around, coat it really nice. Then we hit it with some sea salt. And some white pepper or black pepper if you have it. If you don't have white pepper, you can use black pepper. Make sure it's all together there. And then take that baking sheet. We're going to put it in the oven. And we're going to bake that for about 40 minutes to an hour. We want it to get some color on it. So we can get that color off of it later. All right. Now, while that stuff is roasting, we're going to start working on our pork here.
Now, I've got 2 pounds of pork butt, and I'm going to cut these into 3-inch pieces. You want kind of larger looking pieces here because it won't shrink and begin to soften on you. After a while, you know, this stuff's going to break apart. And pork butt's great. You can always cook the crap out of this stuff. It's never going to toughen up. It's only going to get softer, better, tastier. And listen, if you have any bones in here, throw them in the oven with the rest of that stuff. So if you get some bones out of this, just chuck it in the oven. And we're going to get these things roasted really nicely here in a bit. Okay, now this meat is cut. Now we're going to make the marinade for it, the spicy chili rub. Okay, get a big bowl here. We're going to put in 1/4 cup of ground chili powder, 2 tablespoons of smoked paprika, 2 tablespoons of granulated sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of onion powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and about 10 turns of black pepper. Some freshly cracked pepper. What's happening here? Yeah, I think this thing's out of peppercorns. What a professional I am. Hold on a second. I'll put some more peppercorns in here. That's why I don't have a show. I don't have any peppercorns. Okay. All right, just give it about 8 to 10 cracks there and get some pepper in there. Okay, now after this, we're going to need 2 tablespoons of soy sauce and 1/4 cup of sesame oil. Korean food has a ton of sesame oil in it. That's kind of a flavor. If you taste sesame oil in it, it's definitely Korean. Okay, now we'll come over here. We'll get the marinade all over this pork. We're going to let it sit at room temperature for at least 30 minutes. I prefer a little longer. The longer marinade sets on meat, the better off the flavor that marinade's going to be on the meat. And leave it covered at room temperature. We don't want to put this in the fridge because we're going to have to take it out later. And we're going to waste time while it comes back up to room temperature. You know the rule around here. We do not cook cold meat. We like our meat warm when we stick it in. Yeah, you talking? All right, so let's prep the rest of the ingredients that we have for this stew. We're going to need 2 yellow onions that we're going to slice here, 1/4 inch thick. Slice them really nice and thin. Yellow onions, if you want to use white onions, if you can't get yellow onions, brown onions if you need. Doesn't matter, as long as they're onions. About medium size. And slice them 1/4 inch thick. Try not to cut your finger off. Okay, now we're going to take about 1/4 cup of garlic cloves. We're going to slice these nice and thin. And while we're thinking about it, we got the garnish here. We got the scallions, about 1/4 cup of scallions, about 5 or 6 scallions. And we're going to just go ahead and chop these on a bias so it's got a nice little style to it. And that'll be our garnish, about 1/4 cup. A little more, it doesn't matter. It's good. This is really not even essential. All right, let's check these bones and the vegetables out. They're probably done. Let's start making the stock. Okay, we're going to take a big pot here, a big stock pot, and we're going to give it about 2 gallons of water. You want to use filtered water. If you've got reverse osmosis, that's great. You're going to be boiling the crap out of this, so if you've got hard water, it's not going to matter much. If your water really sucks, I wouldn't use it to cook with. I lived in an old house, man. Oof, that water tasted like chicken ass. Actually, I've tasted chicken ass, and chicken ass tasted better than that water. Okay, we've got the pot of water here. We're going to put this on the stove. We're going to crank the heat on it. Put it on high. Gonna take these vegetables and the pork bones, you're gonna put them in the stock pot. Gonna hit it with some sea salt. A little bit, not too much. You can taste it later, add more. And now some white pepper. Again, if you don't have white pepper, you can just crack some black pepper in there. And get this bad boy up to a bit of a simmer, a little boil, actually. Hit it to boil, and then you can turn it down to medium-high heat. Reduce that heat down to medium, then cover it, and then simmer it for about an hour and a half. It's about how long it's going to take to get the stock rocking. I'd say about 45 minutes in, you can start tasting it for seasoning. If it needs a little salt, add some salt. You don't want to oversalt this too soon. You can always add some salt later. What you're going to be really kind of hitting it with some flavor. I mean, this thing, the layers of flavor are really going to come through here. So when the stock is ready, we're going to go ahead and we're going to strain it in a strainer and save the stock in a big bowl. Taste it, make sure it's okay. If it needs a little salt or something, put some salt in it. And get about 2 quarts of that and save the rest. You can actually put that in a freezer or you want any kind of Tupperware container. It'll keep in your fridge for a while. You need about 2 quarts of that pork stock to save it. Set it on the side there. Okay, so let's take our meat here. I'm going to get a large stock pot over medium-high heat. Add a little oil in there. Now we're going to add this pork butt. We're going to sear it on both sides for about 2 minutes a side. You know the rule here. We don't crowd the pot. We don't put too much in at once. Let it roll. About 2 minutes a side, turn it over, brown it again, take it out, brown some more meat until it's all browned. Take it all aside there. All right, when all your pork has been browned, we're going to take the onions and the garlic. We're going to throw these in the pot. Going to saute these for about 2 to 3 minutes. Stir it up. Try to break up some of that fawn. You can have some black fawn down in there. I have a ton of it. Just kind of roll it around. You know, the onions are going to sweat a little. Going to knock some of that fawn off. But we're going to help matters here. Going to come over here. I've measured out 24 ounces of lager beer. And, of course, the rule here is, you know, if it calls for 2 cans of beer, you drink 2 cans and put 2 cans in the soup. I'm going to take this beer. I'm going to knock it in here. And I'm going to break up the rest of that fawn. I'm going to get it all off the bottom because that's going to bring a lot of the flavor of this stew right out. Stir that up. Break up all that fawn. Now we got beer, onions, garlic. Sounds good. Let's put the pork butt back in here. Get all of that in there. And now we'll take that 2 quarts of stock and we'll throw the stock into the pot. Stir it up real nice. That piece right there, you got it? Okay, cover it. Let it boil for about 5 minutes. Going to reduce the heat to medium-low now. After 5 minutes, we're going to add the soy sauce, the garlic powder, the onion powder, chili flakes, the sugar. It's about 3 tablespoons of sugar there. 2 tablespoons of pepper flakes, and about 2 tablespoons of sesame oil. Taste this stuff. If you've never tasted sesame oil, get a taste of that. That's nice. I like sesame oil. Like I said, man, that's a flavor of Korean food. That and kimchi. Okay, now that's all in there. Stir it real nice. Keep it stirred. Cover that. We're going to simmer it for about 30 minutes. Okay, while that's simmering, we're going to come over here. We've got our new potatoes. These are small boiler potatoes, very small potatoes. Make sure that they're washed really nice. I'm going to take them out over here, and we're going to start to slice these. Slice them lengthwise or slice them half, doesn't matter. Just slice them once. Just try to find the smallest potatoes that you can. These things will cook in about 20 minutes. It won't take long. Again, this stew, you want this stew to cook for a long time. Hour. It's about 50 minutes to an hour, maybe hour and a half. The longer you cook it, the softer that pork's going to get. It's going to be freaking delicious. Okay, we've got these potatoes here. 30 minutes is up on the soup. We're going to throw these potatoes in right there in the pot. Stir that around and cook it for another 20 minutes. Okay. Now, these Korean peppers, they're called gochu. They're very small peppers. They're actually medium-sized peppers. They're smaller than an Anaheim chili. They're long, and they're not hot. They've got a little bit of a bite to them, but you can use any kind of a green chili that is not spicy. And if you want it spicy, you can add some spicy chilies, but just be very careful and give your whoever's eating this with you, give them an option to take it out if they need to. But I took 12 of these, and what I've already done here, I've grilled these peppers so they get a little sweet and get a little char on them, so they're kind of, you know, cooked already. Open the pot here. 20 minutes is up after the potatoes. I'm going to add these peppers. I'm going to season it a little more with salt and pepper. Make sure you taste it. Some flavor on there. We're going to cook this for another 10 minutes. And then we'll turn the heat off. And that's it. Basically, this thing has been cooking now, time lapse, about an hour. And like I said, you want to go an hour and a half? Great. Just keep it on the heat. Turn it off. Keep it on the stove. Keep it closed. And then when you're ready to eat it, you can reheat it and eat it. When you're ready to go, divide the soup among four bowls. Place 2 to 3 pieces of pork, about 4 or 5 pieces of the potato, a couple peppers in each bowl. Make sure you get some onions in there, lots of broth, about halfway up. And then garnish with the scallions. And that's it. Debbie Lee's Hangover Stew. Damn delicious. I'm serious. This stuff's got so much flavor and so many layers of flavor. You're going to be amazed. It's going to be great stuff. Have fun.
I'm delighted to be here for our 2011 Person of the Year panel. It's such a hard year for Person of the Year. And today, these folks are going to help us figure out who it is. Mario, who would you choose?
I like Steve Jobs. I think he did a really good job in changing the way people actually behave. In terms of changing the way people think, I'm a big fan of Michael Pollan, and I think the nutrition card and understanding food and nutrition and the world true near famine aspect that we're headed to, and understanding how to socially do the right thing to create the food support that we're going to need, as well as the water cleanliness that we're going to need, is someone that's cool. But I would have to say that who's had the largest effect on the whole planet without us really paying attention across the board and everywhere is the entire banking industry and their disregard for the people that they're supposed to be working for. Now Europe has to realize they have been paying the bills for a long time, and they're going to get hosed. And the people that are going to get hosed are the education and the health people first, just kind of like in our system, except they've been relying on it for a long time. So the way the bankers have kind of toppled the way money is distributed and taken most of it into their own hands is as good as Stalin or Hitler and the evil guys that you guys have.
Right, we sometimes choose evil guys.
And they're not heroes. Exactly. They're just people that really had a huge effect on the way the world's operating.
You know, Samaria Batali speaking during this Time Person of the Year panel discussion. I don't know why he did this, and I hate when people do this. He believes that the banking industry and their, quote, disregard for the people that they're supposed to be working for has had the largest impact on the world. Maybe I think that might be true, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but immediately all these people start working on Wall Street and Park Avenue that actually can afford to eat Batali's food at the restaurants start canceling reservations. So Eater National breaks this story, and all hell broke loose. Twitter was trending with hashtags like Batali-gate and boycott Batali. Bloomberg restaurant critic Ryan Sutton, he tweeted that one trader called him and said, I just spent $4,000 on a white truffle dinner on Monday at Babbo. This is shitty. I feel used. So immediately, Mario goes into damage control mode, releases 2 tweets the very next day. To remove any ambiguity about my appearance at yesterday's Time Person of the Year panel, I want to apologize for my remarks. It was never my intention to equate our banking industry with Hitler and Stalin, two of the most evil, brutal dictators in modern history. Now, I'm going, wait a minute, Hitler and Stalin? Now I'm thinking back to my defense of Batali on this last episode. Here I'm thinking, you know, what's it cost to eat at Mario's restaurant? Is it more than like a night at Ludabites or Ad Hoc or Bouchon? What's the big deal? You're going out, you're having a good night out, $150 for 2 people, special occasion, maybe you get some wine. It's $150, maybe $200. But Jesus, $4,000? You're shitting me. I kind of figured it was expensive, but not that expensive. If his clientele really is that 1%, the bankers who are pocketing everyone's money, forget everything I said. And listen, they're spending $4,000 on one meal. Fuckers. Give me a sign. I'll protest. Fuck you. Woo, that's a lot of money, man. And Mario's pocketing that kind of cash?
It's funny to watch. Now Mario's kissing their ass because he wouldn't be in business if it wasn't for them. And listen, this is what I said. It's stupid when you compare everybody to Hitler or Stalin, unless you're talking about an actual dictator or a tyrant, Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi. You can compare them to Hitler and Stalin, fine, but not bankers. But you know what he should do? He should compare the bankers to John Dillinger or Jesse James. They robbed banks. But now the shoe's on the other foot. I hope we never see another Hitler or Stalin, especially in this country, as we never have. Again, we're spoiled. We do not know what it's like to be ruled with an iron fist. Really, we think we do, but we don't. We'll bitch and moan like we have. I'll tell you this, you'll never hear a Polish Jew compare anybody to Hitler. There was only one, and one was enough. So let's take it easy. It doesn't make sense. A lot of things don't make sense. Lately, we're nuts. Why would students of Penn State protest? Because their football coach was fired for not speaking out 10 years ago when he knew that one of his assistant coaches was raping 10-year-old boys in the shower. I think we're getting a little nuts. That whole story is sad. Huge cover-up. Just horrible.
Our next guest is a celebrated chef and owner of the Momofuku Restaurants, whose empire now includes a quarterly food journal called Lucky Peach. If you can get this magazine, it's so fun. Issue 2 is on newsstands November 15th. Please welcome Chef David Chang in the house. Rock star, happy to be with us here. Congrats on Lucky Peach.
Thank you very much.
The first issue of this, I loved it so much. It was like, it's recipes and food stories and just interesting stuff. And Tony Bourdain talks stuff in here. This issue includes stickers that you can put on your banana instead of the Jaquita. It's just like all cool, fun stuff like that. I love how fun you are. You're a rock star, my friend.
No.
Oh, I know. What do you got for us tonight? What are we doing?
Let's get a drink first.
Feed me before, now. Oh.
You want a drink?
Yeah, feed it with drinks.
We have pina colada.
Oh, okay, thank you.
But let me explain how we make it first. Okay. So we learned this trick in Japan. This bar, it's called the bar of high five.
I can fly, man. I am wasted.
Oh, my God. Hold my hair.
All right, okay. Woo, I'm wasted.
All right, she is hammered. How do you do this?
So we make, instead of diluting a pina colada with ice, Ueno-san, this bartender, makes a pina colada ice cube first. So all you're going to do is add the rum.
So how does he make the ice cube, though?
3-to-1 ratio of pineapple to coconut milk.
Science.
And just use that? Why not in simple syrup?
Simple syrup.
See, I'm good like that.
And then just grind it. Boom.
All right, and then you got these guys.
Done.
All right, let me see what this is all about.
Interesting.
All right,
don't get wasted, dude.
You don't want to dilute your drink with water, right?
Oh, my God, this is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's a genius idea. Just freeze your drinks and then just put them in the blender when you're ready.
Yep.
So,
first thing I noticed on the inside liner of Debbie's book was that she's been called the female David Chang. Chang seems like a guy who has wrapped his head around every type of Asian cuisine, especially Japanese. I mean, he's revolutionized the way to make ramen. He developed that cereal milk idea. Stretches himself in regards to making traditional food items a little bit better. Look at this pina colada. Why hasn't someone else thought of freezing pineapple juice and coconut milk into cubes before instead of using ice? We've been diluting that drink for years with ice cubes, but somebody, a Japanese guy, stopped and thought, how can we make this drink better? Look, if Debbie's the female David Chang, he's the Korean Steve Jobs. I mean, look what Jobs did with the iPhone. He was always asking, how could Apple make things better? How can we make a cell phone better? The iPhone, which led to the Droid, the BlackBerry, Storm, all that stuff. HTC. How can we deter people from downloading music illegally? iTunes. Sell individual songs, 99 cents. Oh, and here's a portable device called the iPod. We'll play 3,000 of your favorite songs. You can take albums with you in your pocket. This is the stuff that keeps me excited about food. Every time I think I've tasted it all, I haven't. When I think there's not one possible way you can make a dish taste better or increase your efficiency when you make it, you got David Chang, people like David Chang out there waiting to surprise you. Think different. Wasn't that what Apple said for a long? I mean, that was their motto, right? Think different. That is a motto for Momofuku. That was the motto for Obui. They thought differently and they made things better. Hey, listen, Veggie Grill wanted me to mention this.
Veggie Grill here in Southern California is this place that does grilled vegetables. They're celebrating their five-year anniversary all month in November, and they're giving away five $500 gift cards to its Facebook fans that submit the best Veggie Grill-inspired video. Veggie Grill opened here in Irvine back in November of 2006, and they've opened six new locations across L.A. and Orange County. And they want to give back to its loyal fans online. They have 65,000 fans and followers. Veggie Grill is hosting a giveaway on Facebook. If you go to Facebook, like them on Facebook, go to facebook.com/Veggie Grill through November 30th. Like them on Facebook, and then post a video, a testimonial, a first taste or Veggie Grill virgin experience, maybe a song, maybe an off-the-menu item, an ad, or anything Veggie Grill related. By the end of November, Veggie Grill is going to pick five winners. Each winner is going to win a $500 gift card to Veggie Grill. I love vegetables. I love grilled vegetables, and I love Veggie Grill. $500 will buy you a ton of food. Now, they're not an expensive place at all. They're very good and very healthy. They're giving away five of these cards. I think you got a pretty decent shot. If you're relatively talented, knock down a card. Free food, man. Occupy Veggie Grill. Alrighty then. Thanks for listening. Thanks to PBS, Food Network, and NBC for the audio. Listen, I'm sorry I took a shit on that documentary, but it was fun. Don't forget, you can buy Debbie's cookbook, Soul Town Kitchen, right from our website. Music in this episode by Fear Factory, and this song by DeadMau5. I love this tune. If you like these songs, you can buy it from iTunes or from Amazon.com. Click a link on our website, mylifeisafoodie.com. Buy the song for 99 cents. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie.